SF Signal, episode 21. Our panel calls in with their thoughts on breakthrough authors of 2010. Later, we have an interview with prolific science fiction author Bud Sparhawk. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And this week, I had the plague. But, like any good plague, it did rise me from the dead a week later, and now I'm here to do this podcast. But I did have to have our panel call in this week rather than do a live conversation. So let's just jump right into that. This week I asked our folks from SF Signal, which new author published in 2010 stands out in your mind? Everyone has to have a breakthrough at some point. Which genre author published this year stands out as a bright and shining star destined to go on to great things? We had lots of folks call in and give us some answers. So let's go to the first one here. And I believe that is Mr. Scott Cupp. Scott, what do you think?
Hi, this is Scott Cupp wishing the SF Signal readers a Merry Christmas. Been asked the question, what genre author published this year stands out as a bright and shining star destined to go on to big things? Without a doubt, it's Hannu Razaniemi, whose debut novel, The Quantum Thief, appeared in September from Gollancz in England. It's not due out in the U.S. until, I believe, May from Tor. This is a fantastic book that takes the best of Al Reynolds, Charlie Strauss, Greg Egan, all of those good, weird, hard science guys, and just goes absolutely nuts with concepts that could make, you know, 10 volumes things just tossed off here and there. It's a story of new identities, thievery. It's just a fabulous book, and you should all look for it. Another book that I have not read yet is, I believe it's Charles Yu's Living in the Science Fiction Universe. I'm hearing great things about that. So hopefully you'll get one of these things in your Christmas stocking. If not, Amazon UK or Amazon America, go looking for them there. Be warned, Quantum Thief has gone into multiple printings already. First printings are already into triple digits and may head higher. Have a great Christmas. Goodbye.
Excellent, Scott. Thanks for calling in. Let's take a listen to Lisa Pates Spindler. Lisa, what are you thinking?
Hi, this is Lisa Pates Spindler. I'm a blogger and contributor to sfsignal.com. I'm happy to be part of the weekly podcast. You can find me at lisapatespindler.com, and please stay tuned for my debut novella coming out from Carina Press in March of 2011. My two picks for new-to-me books in 2010 are two books that came out, I think, at the end of 2009. First one is The Midnight Guardian by Sarah Jane Stratford, and the second is Darkborn by Alyssa Sinclair. Stratford's book is alternate history vampires during World War II from a strong female character's point of view, and I just love this book. It was such a great twist on so many of the other vampire stories that are out there right now. It did have a romance in it, but clearly Stratford knows her topic and really brought her characters to life. I'd say something similar, really, about Sinclair's Darkborn. It's a fantasy novel and not about vampires, but about creatures who can only live in the dark and creatures who can only live in the light and how they coexist in a city together. I think the sequel to this is out now called Lightborn, which I will definitely be picking up. Those books were highlight reads for me in 2010.
Awesome picks, Lisa. Let's switch over and see what Jessica has to say. Jessica, tell us what you're thinking.
Hi, this is Jessica Strider from scififanletter.blogspot.com. I actually read quite a number of really good debut novels this year, so I'm just going to mention a few very quickly. State of Decay by James Knapp is about a society where if you serve in the army, you're at the highest echelon. If you give your body over to serve in the army after you die as a reviver, you're in the next level of the hierarchy. And anyone who doesn't want to do either of the above ends up as one of the dregs of society. And it's a cop who has to go through and find revivers who have been stolen and get them back into the area of society where they're supposed to be, doing whatever menial jobs that they've been set up for. And it's got some really great undertones. You find out towards the end of the novel that something's going on that you're unaware of for the rest of the book. Veracity by Laura Binham. It's a 1984-style repressive society. The main character, Harper, joins the resistance when her daughter's name is redlisted. If you like Jane Austen, Shades of Milk and Honey by Mary Robinette Cowell. It's a world where illusion magic is one of the womanly arts, along with painting and piano playing. The 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin is a fantasy with great mythology, intrigue, and very interesting characters. And finally, if you like horror, Mr. Shivers by Robert Jackson Bennett is about a man who chases death in Depression-era America. Now, I didn't read every debut novel, obviously, but these were some of the great ones that I read in 2010. Thank you.
No. Thank you, Jessica. That was an awesome list. And speaking of awesome lists, there's a guy who always seems to come up with some really great lists, and that is Mr. Fred Kish. Fred, lay it on us.
Hi, this is Fred Kish from the Lensman Signal with one of my thoughts about the surprises of 2010. And that would be I learned how to install Linux on a dead badger. In all seriousness, that is the name of a book. I know it's dated from 2007, but I did not discover it till this year, by Lucy A. Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R. And it's clear that Lucy spent a lot of time either reading puff pieces from PR groups or writing them herself, because the book is mostly a series of vignettes, as if you have zombies working for you, or your user manual for installing Linux on a dead badger, as the title suggests, and associated subjects. Very humorous stuff, especially how you can use a fry machine to help save the world. Two more authors that really surprised me this year were Rick Spohr and Larry Correa, both published in paperback from Bayin Books. Spohr came to us with a book called Grand Central Arena, which is about one of the best homages, other than Doc Taylor's Warp Speed from several years ago, one of the best homages to Doc Smith that I've seen in years. Larry came to us with a sequel to his Monster Hunter International with a book called Monster Hunter Vendetta. NHI was a surprise paperback bestseller last year. MHV is another surprise paperback bestseller. Both deal with a secret organization that kill monsters, vampires and such. These vampires don't sparkle. Seriously, take a look at Monster Hunter International. Read the first chapter, and I'll bet you never had a day at work like that. Another thing that was of interest this year for me was actually not SF-related, but actual science-related. And that's how the concept of citizen science, the participation of ordinary folks like you or me in big science projects, has grown. If you look around on the web for things like Galaxy Zoo and Moon Zoo, these are ways that people can participate in projects that generate a lot of data, like the LRO, which is orbiting the moon right now, taking pictures upon pictures upon pictures of moon craters, and so many pictures that the full-time scientists don't have the time to work on this. So they've enlisted us to do things like classify the craters, guess the ages and such. Wonderful stuff. So take a look around for Moon Zoo, Galaxy Zoo, and similar projects. And you, too, can help out science. Again, Fred Kish from Lensman's Children, and hope you all have a good 2010. Bye-bye.
Awesome list, Fred. You suddenly had me going, she blinded me with science. next up, we have Clifton Hill. Clifton, what's on your list?
Hi, this is Clifton Hill. aspiring author, artist, and blogger. You can find me at www.cliftonh.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/CliftonHill. Calling about the best debut author of 2010, I have to take one of Andrew Liptak's choices, Spellright by Blake Charlton. Sorry, Andrew, but really it's a better thing for me. You've read far more books this year. I think Charlton may be one of just a couple debut authors I've read in 2010. Anyway, aside from stealing ideas, Charlton is an excellent pick. His book, Spellright, it's classic wizardly fantasy in many ways, but leaps off the pages, I think, from like pretty much the beginning, with character and a vivid world that, you know, just really paints a great picture. And it goes to support my feeling that no matter how many times something has been done, if you have interesting characters, you can make it work. I shouldn't ignore his unique take on magic, but most importantly, his personal inclusion of dyslexia as a major and personal element of conflict within the book that helped make this tome shine. Now, it wasn't perfect, but I think it did amply provide that the man can write. And if you've heard him speak, you can rest assured he will be an authorial force for years to come. The only thing that will ever end up impeding his progress will be his own second love of medicine, in whatever form it ends up that he practices. I have high hopes for him and wish him the very best. For anyone interested, I wrote a review of Spellright on my blog as well, cliftonh.com. On further thought, there are also a couple other authors that may or may not have debuted in 2010 that I'm just itching to read. Patrick Rothfuss, Dan Wells, Peter B. Brett, and I'm sure a whole bunch others that I have listed somewhere. Anyways, that's it for me. Happy holidays to everyone.
Blake Charlton. The name seems familiar. Isn't he like a doctor? A bald doctor? A kid. We love Blake. Peter V. Brett, also an awesome guy. Met him at World Fantasy. Definitely people should check out The Warden Man. Let's see. Oh, last but certainly not least on our contributors list this week is Mr. John DiNardo. John, go.
Hi, this is John DiNardo from SF Signal. Which new author published in 2010 stands out in my mind? That's a tough question. A lot of the books I read this year were from already established authors. However, two do come from new authors, and I thought they were pretty good and certainly worth mentioning. One was The Dream of Perpetual Motion by Dexter Palmer, which is a literary steampunk novel that's actually of quite high caliber. Lots of steampunk novels are about the romance of the genre. This novel actually was more bent towards the literary side. It seemed to have something to say about technology and how we rely on it, and that gave the story an extra weight that a lot of today's steampunk lacks, and definitely worth a read, The Dream of Perpetual Motion by Dexter Palmer. The other book that I enjoyed by a first-time author was much less literary by far, but actually I thought a little more enjoyable, and that was The Breach by Patrick Lee. This was his first novel, and it's about an ex-cop who becomes entangled with a secret organization that's tasked with studying mysterious alien artifacts that come through from another dimension. Sounds a little hokey, sounds a little X-Files-ish, but man, was it fun. It was just nonstop action from start to finish, very engrossing. First half reads like mainstream thriller. In fact, the book synopsis makes it sound like a mainstream thriller, which is why I passed it up when it was first released. But I read it in 2010 and enjoyed it very much. And there you go.
Thank you, John. And thanks to all of our contributors for calling in with their breakthrough authors for 2010. I appreciate it as always. And if you feel that there was some author that we omitted or someone that we should have been paying attention to, you know, feel free to give us a call. Our voicemail line is 720-277-9082. And maybe we'll use your voicemail on a future show. If you use the Google widget on the actual post, Google will call you, and then it doesn't cost you a long-distance call. You just plug your number in, and it'll automatically dial you. and then you can leave a voicemail. 3 minutes is the max. Obviously, you can also record something and shoot it to us at voicemail@sfsignal.com, or, as always, you are free to leave comments on the post. Now, let's get on to our interview for the week. John DiNardo and I had the opportunity to meet and talk with Bud Sparhawk at World Fantasy, which led to our being able to do this interview with him. He's a prolific science fiction author, and this is a great conversation. So stay tuned. That's coming up right now. And tonight we're joined by Bud Sparhawk, who is a science fiction author. It's John DiNardo and myself here chatting with you. Thanks for coming on tonight, Bud.
Glad to be here.
And you have been doing this for a while now. You have a lot of novels, you have short stories, you've been nominated for Nebulas. I believe you've come in as a finalist several times.
Three times.
Three times. That's awesome. Let's see. Let's just talk a little bit about, you know, your projects, some of the novels that you've written. I mean, just very, very briefly, help our listeners understand who Bud Sparhawk is.
Well, I started writing back in 1970s. I was in the Air Force at the time. And I was on TDY in Sapporo, Japan, and it was a winter, and it was cold, and there wasn't much to do. And I had a copy of Dangerous Visions in my baggage, so I opened that up, and I started reading. And I read it for about 4 hours, and then I realized that I could probably write better material than I was reading. But what most impressed me was Harlan Ellison's foreword and afterwards after each story, which gave me an indication as to the life of a writer and what a writer was trying to accomplish. And I sat down and I scribbled a story on some yellow pad, started the story, and finished it a couple weeks later. It was about 12,000 words, I think, or something like that. And thought, well, that wasn't too hard. Maybe I'd better start sending these things out. I never sent that one out. And so I sat down and started writing stories longhand and then typing up on a Selectric. And sure enough, 35 stories later, all rejected by 19 different magazines, I finally made my first sale in 1976 to Ben Bova at Analog.
Wow.
And then I sold a second one about a year later. And then I got out of graduate school, got out of the Air Force, and had to raise kids and buy a house and settle down and find someplace I could make some money to support the family. And 13 years later, I decided, well, I'm stable enough now, I can start writing again.
You just brought something to mind. First of all, you know, John and I got to meet you at World Fantasy, and that was a real treat for us. I know John was really excited.
Yeah.
you mentioned the Air Force.
Yes.
One of the things that we've talked about in the past is the influence of military service on the science fiction writer. In other words, you know, folks who are in the military, sort of taking those experiences and that, you know, turning that into the science fiction that they write. Do you feel that you draw a lot from your military service when you're
mostly
writing?
Mostly inspiration. I did some writing in the library on a couple of assignments and found out that for two or three assignments, I was tracking Keith Lomer, who also sat in the library to write some of his stuff. Hmm. Ran into him, librarian in England, mentioned him to me, and then another one in San Antonio mentioned it. So I can't say that there has been a direct influence. I have used material that I've gotten out of the military about how the military works, how people address each other, how things look to them, the attitudes and behaviors that they might have. And I use that to most effect, I think, in Clay's Pride, where I had the had a ship under duress and had the interaction of the officers and all the men trying to save the ship, and relied a lot on that.
And that is one of the stories that was became a Nebula finalist, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was.
Is that still, I mean, where can people get that if they were looking for that right now?
Almost all of my stories up until about 2 years ago is available on FictionWise.
Okay.
And then when FictionWise was taken over, they suddenly stopped talking to the science fiction writers. So I haven't been able to upload anything from late 2008 onward to FictionWise.
Okay.
So I'm looking for another place I can put it.
We just talked with Vonda and McIntyre about Bookview Cafe.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that? Maybe,
yes.
That could be a possibility for you. When you look at all the things that you've written, do you think that Sam Boone kind of stands out as a favorite character for people?
I think in the far distant future, when my bones have gone to dust, I will still carry the curse of Sam Boone upon my name.
It's interesting that you call it a curse.
Well, it's humor. It's not science fiction. It's mostly fantasy. It is sort of whacked out. I had a very heavy influence from Kelly Freese. His art informed my characters. And basically, Sam Boone is me. You know, somebody who just bumbles along and tries to make do with whatever's available, and somehow it all sort of works out.
Gotcha. And you know, what do you prefer? I mean, when you sit down to write, do you have in your head, you know, I'm gonna write this story. What do you decide? What do you prefer to write? I mean, do you prefer to write the humorous stuff? Do you prefer to write more hard science fiction?
There's a writer who I admire in analog is Brian Plant. Brian Plant writes short stories very infrequently. And I know going into reading the story that at the story end, it is going to tug on my heartstrings and bring tears to my eyes. Hmm. I know this. I know it. I realize it. I steel myself against it. I cannot deny it. And I say, I am not going to let him manipulate me again. And by the end of the story, there I am with the Kleenex in hand, crying like a babe. I wish I could write like him.
You say that, Bud, but boy, when I read your story, Bright Red Star, I thought that was just fantastic. That was just unbelievable and emotional. You wrote that in response to 9/11, is that right?
Yes, I wrote that in 9/11, and the protagonist in that is in the seat of the airplane, as it were. And I wanted to get that perspective in there because I got sick and tired of hearing people calling these people crazy. They're not crazy. They're completely rational. But they're not the rationality that we particularly admire.
You're right. It's you know you're doing the right thing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And there's a line in there of saving souls. And I think that's the telling part there. Now, I have written two more stories in that universe.
Really?
One appeared in Defending the Future series. Wasn't in Breach of the Hull. It was the second one in the series called The Glass Box.
Mm-hmm.
And in this month, I think the third anthology in the Defending the Future series comes out. It's called By Other Means. And I have a shardy story in that called Cybermarine, which basically tells you how the protagonist in Bright Red Star came to be what he was.
All right, looking forward to that.
Yeah. And then in the next issue of Analog that comes out, I've got a very short piece, Astronomic Distance, Geologic Time, which is I think, very interesting. It was challenging. It took almost 9 months of research to get all the material together and put them in a the proper time frame for that. And I went back and forth with Stan Schmidt at least a dozen times, and had to call in a couple astronomers to help me with some of the hard parts on there. But I'm pretty proud of it. And then the following month, there's going to be a fun story called The Old Man's Best, which is basically about two guys trying to do some homebrew in space without getting caught. And that's written mostly it's humor. A lot of beer research went into that
one. I can imagine. Yeah, it was probably a lot of long, arduous hours.
Well, actually, it was a lot of science involved trying to figure out how you can make beer in orbit, you know, when you don't have all the materials and availability around here. And then when I hit on the fact that brewing beer makes gas, that gave me the key to making the story a lot of fun.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was watching Stargate Universe. And they had a couple of guys who leave their ship and like jump over to another ship that has a hole in the hull and there's no oxygen atmosphere. And the guy pulls up his like P90 and cocks it and starts walking through the ship. And I put out on Twitter, I said, can you fire a gun in space? Just a regular old gun? Can you
yes.
fire those in space? And I got back like 10 different answers of yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And so it's interesting that you think, you know, can you brew beer? And I wouldn't know. That just kind of throws me.
Well, actually, that stemmed from at Worldcon. When was it? 07? 06, maybe?
I find it difficult to believe that there was a conversation about beer at a Worldcon.
At WorldCon, Alan Steele and I were sitting on a panel about beer making in space. And as a funny aside, Bob Chance was sitting in the audience. And I said, it should be, and this was well into the humorous part of the thing, which started about 2 minutes after that we kicked off the panel discussion. I mentioned the fact that one of the ways you could make beer is to take cows, digestive systems, biologically modify them into making them into brew machines. At which Bob Chase reached up and said, that would be the herd shot around the world.
Ouch, but also funny.
Yes, yes, yes. You're asking me what I do when I start. I don't really... I'll start with an idea. I tried to put this into my blog a little bit ago. Is you have an idea. Maybe it's an ending. Maybe it's a beginning. Maybe it's an interesting scientific fact. Maybe it's a joke that you want to tell, and then you basically figure out how to flesh that out and build it up into a story. And then when you get all the pieces in place, you look at it and say, you know, is this really interesting, or can I shift these pieces around a little bit, put them in a little different order, and get some viewpoint on this and that and the other thing? I wrote a story back in the 90s where I basically had a fairly linear story, two parts, and I decided, well, I'm going to interleave them, but then I put them all on cards and I threw it on the floor and picked it up in a random order. And when I looked at it, I realized there was another organizational concept that I could use to organize this story. So I kind of put it into that sense. So we have this thing of the overall story takes place over a matter of 8 hours. The subplot takes place over several million years. The subplot takes place over the life of a marriage. The subplot takes place over the life cycle of the romance and later the divorce.
Wow.
So it was relatively complex, but I was pretty damn proud of it. And it got absolutely no notice whatsoever.
Isn't that the way it goes, though? The ones that you just love and people just don't seem to get it, and it just drives you up a wall.
Yeah, and then they come back and say, oh, you're the guy who wrote the Sam Boone stuff.
Now, you brought to mind another thought when you talked about, you know, how 9/11 that inspired you to write something. As we're recording this, NASA announced today the arsenic-based life forms.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty exciting.
Do you think that is just going to have science fiction authors, you know, just pounding away on their keyboards tonight?
No, I don't think it'll happen. I think it'll inform a small detail in something that somebody is already writing just to get primacy out there. But I don't see a new body of work emerging from this. Hell, we've dealt with aliens for 50 years now. Why should something like this be a surprise?
Right. Well, I mean, maybe it's time for just a different kind of alien.
True. What would be more interesting is the fact that most of Florida, as you know, is built on phosphate rock, which is the deposition of millions and millions and millions of sea animals dying in their little phosphorus descending to the bottom to pack up in these huge layers.
Right.
I'm wondering if the similar sort of thing is occurring at, what is it, Mondo Lake? Mm-hmm. Is the bottom, is there a deposition layer of crystallized arsenic down there?
Wow, that's an interesting thought. You mentioned your blog, I know a lot of older authors who haven't necessarily embraced blogging yet, so I think it's really cool that you are doing that. How often do you blog?
Occasionally. When I have something to say, I started writing a series of things on writing technique. I'm very big on technique, and that's usually the first thing that I ask an author I admire is how the hell do you do this? How do you organize things? How do you jump into this and do it and so forth and all? And I get a variety of answers and kind of internalize them, and I sort of have said, okay, here's what seems to work, and I put them up in what I call this scene theory 101, 102, 103, et cetera, in the blog in there, just to get it down so that I can – I write them mostly to clarify my own thoughts more than hoping to educate anybody else.
Gotcha. So not often?
Not often. I do it more frequently now that I'm working on a novel. Because there's more time that I need to do research. That is, not sit there and have the blood pouring out of my forehead.
Well, the internet is a fascinating tool for delivering useless facts to us.
Yes. You go into the internet and say, you know, I really want to know how physics that take place in the event horizon near a black hole. And a half hour later, you're sitting there watching folk dances from Lower Bavaria. saying, how the hell did I get here?
Yes, it does. So that leads us into, why don't you tell people, you know, where your website is? Where can they find you online?
http://people/bud_sparhawk.
Okay, and do you have links to all your books there and your stories?
Yes. I have a complete bibliography there. And in the bibliography, I try to explain what was in my mind when I wrote the story, insights, whatnot.
Oh, that's awesome.
Also have the date and the length and so forth and all. It's sort of preparing my package for archiving at some point in time. I've been running this website since, when did I start on this thing? 94, 95, I guess. Wow. And it's gone through about 17 different iterations as technology and software have changed on the years. So when I discovered CSS, all of a sudden everything became very much easier.
Yes, everybody feels that way.
Yeah.
Do you put any fiction out there for free for folks on your site?
I just dipped a toe into the ebook marketplace. I had five novellas appear in Bane's universe back in 08-09 on there. Two of them were new pieces, new novellas. Two of them had appeared in Analog, and one of them had appeared in a collection, a POD collection that I wrote. So what happens is I put them all together in the proper sequence and made them into a novel.
Oh, wow.
And the basis of that was Primrose and Thorn, which was another one of the Nebula nominee novellas.
Yep, and since we went there, I think the third one was called Magic's Price.
Magic's Price is completely different universe, yes. But anyway, so I put all these five stories together into a novel, ironed out the kinks between them and so forth, put a little forward in there to lead people into what was going to take place, added a few little, put a little few ornaments in here and there, and then I got put a cover page on it, and I threw it out there to the world and charged $1.99 to download. So it's about 100,000 words.
Awesome. Well, you know, I hope that you do that some more, because, you know, a lot of authors who have older stuff that is out of print are finding, you know, new life on the ebook market.
Well, I talked to John Betancourt at Capclave in October, and he told me he was going to put Vixen, which was the paperback novel of mine, he was going to put that out as an ebook. Mm-hmm. Out of Wildside Press, so I'll have two out there in the e-world, I guess.
Very awesome. Now, yeah. Obviously, we met you at World Fantasy, and I know you were also going to PhilCon. Any other upcoming events or signings or appearances?
Let's see. I just did PhilCon, and we went up to the authors and editors on there. RavenCon in February. And then there's a hiatus. We hit the Nebulas. That's
Reno?
Washington, D.C.
Oh.
May 19th through the 22nd.
Okay.
Tickets are limited. So if you're not a writer and want to get in there, you better jump as soon as it comes available on January 10th. And then it's going to be Balticon.
Okay, very cool.
End of that month, and Confluence in Pittsburgh, and I haven't got any invitations to anything else. That's about it for now.
That's a pretty full roster.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, busy. You know, I also have to attend other things as a member of the CIFWA board, and then I'm a member of Sigma, which is the science fiction advisory group to the government, and we occasionally get called out to attend some affair and put our words of wisdom down.
That usually sounds horribly interesting.
Well, you would think so, but it's just like a damn panel discussion at a con, except people that are actually sitting there hanging on your every word. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You know, are we going to see beer on the space shuttle soon?
No, as I mentioned, there's a gas problem.
Oh.
You asked me a little bit earlier about what I was working on right now.
Yes, I did. You know, what do you got coming up? What's going
on? I've got two novels that are under consideration now at two different houses on there. One of them has cleared the first reader, the guy that reads it before the editor reads it. Mm-hmm. The other is in that situation right now, but he seems to like what he's read for the part he's read so far. I'm working on a new novel right now. It's about, I'm about 30K into this, and I have a novella in process, as well. That's a little more messy. I've always got three or four short stories underway, various ages. I'll work on some for a while and put it away, and then come back to it later, and so forth, and all. So it's a balancing act. And just yesterday, I got a proposal approved for delivery in 2011 for a rather large anthology.
Oh, wow.
That I can't disclose, but I now have to climb a friggin' mountain, and I don't have the slightest idea of what I'm going to do. But, you know, that's the best thing. You basically, sometimes you just noodle around, and eventually something comes out. It's funny. Chuck Gannon, who is a good friend of mine and lives just up the road from here, mentioned to me that he says, I'm irrepressible. He says, I cannot write a story without some humor in it. And I think he's right. It just seems to come out of nowhere.
But I think that's awesome, though.
Well, yeah, when I was in school, they used to call me a smartass. So I think a lot of that comes. And that's what came out in the Sam Boones.
There's a character that I like, Dresden, by Jim Butcher. And there was one of the stories, someone asked him something along the lines of, are you always a smartass? And he said, no, sometimes I sleep.
Good.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on with us tonight, bud. This has been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. And I don't Twitter, by the way.
Okay.
But I am on Facebook.
Okay. Is it just facebook.com/BudSparhawk, or do people have to search for you? Or
just type Bud Sparhawk into the friends, into the search panel, and you'll find me.
Okay.
I've got a fan page out there that somebody put up for me, but I'm not sure where it is or how to get to it. But anyway, I've got links on there on my webpage to Blogger, which is where I blog. And there's all kinds of other stuff on there. So
awesome. Well, hopefully everybody will go and check out your stuff and definitely download that ebook.
Oh, please do. I could use the money.
Well, thanks for coming on again, and hopefully we'll see you at the next convention that John and or I drag our lazy butts out to.
Okay, I'll see you there, guys, and thanks for calling.
No problem, thank you. And there you have our interview with Bud Sparhawk. Thanks again for coming on, Bud. We really appreciate it. That's it for episode 21 of the SF Signal podcast. This is hitting on Christmas week if you celebrate Christmas. It could also be Saturnalia or the winter solstice or Kwanzaa or any other winter holiday that I'm not aware of yet. So whatever you do celebrate, please have a great winter holiday. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, so on and so forth. We'll see you next week. Bye.